Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
And I'm Mike McDougall.
Well, today on the show, we're talking the Trump-Putin summit in Helsinki, Stephen Harper's ongoing misery and attempts to destroy our trading relationship with our biggest trading partner, the United States, and the election cabinet that Justin Trudeau put together this week. But first, how was the last 2 weeks, folks?
Great.
Yeah? Good.
Sure.
Good.
I can't remember what I did, though. I'm actually drawing a complete blank about what the last 2 weeks of my life have been about.
Well, hey, when I was away, you guys, Doug Ford was sworn in. How's it feel living in Ford Nation?
Yeah, it's great. Happy.
Yeah. Let's see. We're back to 1998 sex ed.
Well, and the canceling the revisions to indigenize the history and social studies curriculum. That's nice. Let's just ignore the calls from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Just ignore that. So,
put
it's a bit
Sam
scary.
Osterhoff
Plus,
in charge
he
of education.
Did he fire the chief scientist as well?
Yeah. Sam Osterhoff, as parliamentary assistant to the education minister, had to be one of the lowest points in the new Ford regime. The kid's like 20.
And he's homeschooled. He never went to a public school in his life.
That's right. And a virgin.
Yeah.
Self-described virgin and traditional family value. Definitely the type of guy I want, you know, with our... Oh, but here's something to take heart in. I've made this joke a few times, so I will again. Our education minister, Lisa Thompson, is a goat herder by profession. She is actually ran a goat cooperative. So, as I like to say, she knows a lot about kids.
Oh, come on. Oh, you know what? I think that comment cancels the podcast. We should just retire.
That's it. I'll show myself out.
We've peaked.
But like, honestly, if the redone curriculum involves, you know, how goats mate and foreplay amongst goats, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I don't know if Billy goats do it different than others, but.
It just reeks to me of such pandering. It's like, well, I can't do bucket beer because I can't do that. And I can't do the other stuff I promised. So I might as well just do something I can do, which is, you know, get rid of this, you know, sex ed curriculum that people are upset about because they don't know why they're upset about it. It's just something easy to do to show you that I'm working for the people, right? It's just so stupid.
And how about Charles McVetty? Charles McVetty, the wingnut, racist, evangelical, and I use that term very loosely, firebrand is the Ford Whisperer. He's the one giving him advice on the sex ed curriculum. Gird your loins, folks.
Was that a favor to the real right winger who was running? You know what I've noticed related to this since he got elected in my very liberal hood in East End Toronto? Suddenly the anti-abortionists are out again, waving the signs with the dismembered corpses of fetuses.
They've never gone away, Leanne.
I never saw them in the East End. I really never have seen them there before.
They did a college campus tour last year, which was interesting. They went to a lot of the college campuses in Toronto and... You know, the campuses let them on because they are public institutions and free speech, et cetera, et cetera. And it was pretty sad because my observation was that most students were just like, why are these weirdos on campus? Right. Like that was kind of their, my point is they haven't really gone away. They're out there.
Yeah. But my feeling is though, just like what went on in the States is these people start to feel emboldened when real right wingers get elected, right? Like I've never seen them in that neighborhood before in all the years that I've lived there. And they were right in the middle of things, harassing people, waving signs, challenging people. I got into it with one of them, like a dude. I said, you know what, as a man, you have no say in this debate at all. So just
unless he wants, he wants your say in whether or not he should or shouldn't be getting a vasectomy. Like, honest to God. But I don't even like calling them pro-lifers. I liked calling them pro-forced pregnancy. That's what they want. That is what it is. Because it has nothing to do with pro-life. Because if a child is born and there is absolutely no support system or mechanism to care for said child, and we know that a lot of these people who style themselves pro-life actually don't believe in any sort of viable social safety net, and believe tax cuts can pad a crib and feed a baby alone. It's It's ludicrous. They don't want a good life for this kid. They just want to be able to pop more out without any sort of balance in terms of how to care for them.
Well, my brother pointed out to me.
That was my argument to them. That was my argument. What do you do, A, to increase access to birth control to teenage girls who want it? And what do you do, B, after these babies are born? They start yelling at me about, you don't know what I do. You need to go blow me. Blow me, Mr. Anti-abortionist.
Okay, blow Mike, me. What does your brother say?
I was going to say, my brother was telling me yesterday that he walked by a group of anti-abortion protesters, and he did point out the irony that they also don't believe in contraception, which is like,
yes,
yeah, like it's what he's supposed to do.
Anyway, we went off on a tangent. My
we
point
did.
Really is I do fear that when these people get emboldened in times like this, right, suddenly they crawl out of the woodwork where it was politically incorrect maybe to be doing it in certain areas and to be waving signs in people's faces and to be outwardly racist the way we're seeing in the United States and calling the police on black people all the time for doing nothing. But they're emboldened.
Well,
one of their own is running the show, so
well,
why not?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know, and I know this is not what we were going to get into today, but I also just wanted to flag for an award, Bigot of the Week, Lucy McLeod. Wow. decides to take a round out on our immigration minister for suggesting that the remarks on the problems with the migrants coming across the Canadian border, which is not in the tens of thousands by any stretch of the imagination, is a problem that the federal government must solve. And the immigration minister took objection, I think it would be fair to say, to some of the comments that McLeod and others in her party were making about basically sending them back or not welcoming them and basically implying that these people were here to do damage. She said that the minister was bullying her and should sit down and have a cup of tea and relax, which would be, you know, oh, so ironic if the tables were turned. But you know what I found about that whole situation very interesting? Lisa McLeod, would she ever call a white man a bully?
No. Of course not.
Honest to God, I thought, oh yeah, here we go. The poor white woman who is being victimized by the big black man. Isn't that a travesty? And that's the thing. They gin up their base with this kind of, you know, code talk, and it's sick. And it's coming north, and we saw it in London again this week. I don't know if anybody saw the clip. The Sobeys clip. This guy's yelling, it won't let this guy leave because he says he's an illegal immigrant. How the hell he knew that, I don't know. But he wouldn't let him leave the Sobeys. But this is what Lisa McLeod and Doug Ford, our goat-herding education minister who believes probably in the rhythm method and the stork, this is what they engender in people. It brings out the worst in us, and it just shows how not immune we are to the effects of what's going on south of our border.
Absolutely.
Well, and I want to bring up Candace Bergen once we start talking about the election cabinet, but Candace Bergen had a doozy of a tweet this week too.
Good. Well then, let's get quickly to that in a little bit. But first, okay, let's talk about Helsinki. So he came, he saw, he genuflected, then he sold his country out. Donald Trump met with the Russian president and, of course, his employer, Vladimir Putin, in Helsinki this past Monday for a summit that only the two of them really wanted. Actually, I would say probably more Trump wanted it. You know, you always have to do kind of a biannual check-in performance review with your boss. So good on him for wanting that. The two spent the first 2 hours alone, no aides, no officials present, only a translator discussing we don't know what, and then emerged for a press conference at which Trump slammed Hillary Clinton, said he took Putin's denial of 2016 election interference seriously, despite evidence and assertions to the contrary by U.S. law enforcement and intelligence officials, as well as the 12 indictments of Russian nationals that Mueller rolled out the same day, and then suggested he was willing to ship over American diplomats for questioning by the Russian government, among them former Obama-era Ambassador to Russia, Mike McFaul. But before we start talking about this, let's have a few clips from the press conference that I hope signals the end of the Trump presidency or beginning of the end.
Would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016 and would you warn him to never do it again?
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. The probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. What happened to the server? What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace.
Does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family?
Yeah, so that I just had to get that little clip of him laughing because I think it says so much. But while Trump flew back on Air Force One after this press conference, if you can call it that, politicians of all stripes, including feckless Republican cowards who found their spine briefly, as well as Democratic patriots and Trumpers like Newt Gingrich, who never misses an opportunity to fillet the Donald and the media, including state propaganda network Fox News, piled on with Anderson Cooper of CNN, summing it up best when he said that it was, quote, one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president and a summit with a Russian leader ever. And Fox's Neil Cavuto called it disgusting. Well, when you've lost Fox, but after arriving back to Washington following the absolute shitstorm he created, Trump did feel the need to clarify his remarks for us rubes that stupidly took him literally.
I came back and I said, what is going on? What's the big deal? So I got a transcript. I reviewed it. I actually went out and reviewed a clip of an answer that I gave. And I realized that there is a need for some clarification. It should have been obvious. I thought it would be obvious, but I would like to clarify just in case it wasn't. In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. So just to repeat it, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. And the sentence should have been, and I thought it would be maybe a little bit unclear on the transcript or unclear on the actual video. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative. So you could put that in, and I think that probably clarifies things pretty good by itself.
So what do you think? Double negative, Leanne?
You really have to wonder who the morons, who are the morons who said, hey, here's a great idea. Let's go out and say that he meant to say wouldn't instead of would. Like, that's your defense? Honest to God.
How many hours of spin did they sit around a table coming up with
and
that?
And that's what you come up with. And, you know, I don't know what more we can say about that disgraceful episode than has already been said. I think Nancy Pelosi had a great tweet saying, you know, so obviously the PP tape is real. Right? Like, Putin didn't even deny that they had something on him.
No, he laughed.
You know, the question is now, like, what do you do about it? Like, how can you possibly tolerate this guy staying in power? But I was at a funeral that day when all that went out, and I was hanging out with some people that I went to high school with who, you know, no offense to them, but some of them are high school dropouts. They didn't necessarily follow the news very closely. They, you know, they just almost don't want to know. Every single person at that funeral was talking about that. Like, so that performance has penetrated down to the people who maybe just think all of the stuff against Trump is trumped up, pardon the pun. You know, that was a turning point, I think, in even conservative perceptions of this guy. Like, clearly, there's something really wrong here.
So, Mike, does Vladimir Putin have compromising material on Donald Trump? What do you think?
Oh, I think he does, but I don't. I mean, when you look at the kind of the conspiracy theory about like the PP tape, which I really hope is true, but it probably isn't. I just really think it's as simple as, you know, there is a narrative out there where people are saying you know, that it's Trump's insecurity and his ego that won't let him admit this. And the argument that they're making is, you know, if Trump admits that there was some meddling in the election, you know, then that means that his election is illegitimate and he's an illegitimate president and his ego won't let him believe that. And I kind of reject that narrative because Trump is not really saying there wasn't hacking in the election. He just keeps trying to blame it on someone other than Russia. You know, at one point he blamed a 400-pound person in a basement. So right. He's admitting that there's been election meddling. He's trying to move it away from Russia. And so what I honestly think is that, you know, we know that Don Jr. met with Russian operatives in Trump Tower. We know that Donald Trump, there was a clip on us on Twitter where he publicly said at a rally, hack Hillary Clinton's emails. And then that day, Russia did it. So I think it's as simple as Trump had help from Russia. He knows it. And he's just trying to deflect the narrative from that.
But the other thing is he's too stupid to understand the difference between hacking and collusion. Like, he's confusing. Anytime there's any mention of Russia hacking, his response is there was no collusion. Like, they're two separate things, actually, you stupid orange moron. Right?
But maybe they're not, Leanne. Like, maybe his campaign asked Russia to help them. So when they say hacking, he doesn't see the difference in collusion and hacking because it is the same thing.
He doesn't understand. And if he had a brain in his head, he would be able to distinguish. That would be an almost semi-intelligent defense. Look, we know they hack. We know they've done it. But they didn't have anything to do with me winning the election.
Well,
right? He can't even deny that they hacked. He can't even acknowledge that they hacked because he's confusing the two because he's too stupid to live.
Well, so, you know, so there is a guy that I like to follow. He's John Schindler, who is former National Security Agency. And he has been quite oblique in terms of suggesting that the P-tape is in fact real and that elements of the Steele dossier that came out are in fact real. But what he says is it's not. When he says that he's seen this so-called tape, but he says that he basically implied that it probably has something to do with children and Donald Trump. And these, so he says, imagine the lowest levels of depravity. And that is pretty much what this video is about. He's seen it. He said that that's why in 2017, May 2017, when Chuck Grassley, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and Dianne Feinstein, the ranking member on the Senate Intelligence Committee, they were briefed by Comey and they came out and they looked like they were white as a sheet and he couldn't barely speak. So he let Dianne Feinstein, who's the ranking member, speak on behalf of both of them while he was standing right there. He says they've seen that tape. They know what's on that tape. The Russian government's code names for Trump refer to things that he has done that speak to his depravity, he says. So I think that PP tape is real, you know, as somebody said, I don't think it's necessarily because it started out being called the P tape, right? But the P tape could also mean pedophilia. It could also mean other things. And remember, Trump has also been accused of raping a 13-year-old girl and was well known with the Jeffrey, what's his last name?
Epstein
yeah. circuit, who regularly abused underage girls. So I don't want that video to come out publicly, but I would like Republicans who have seen it to demand or do something to stop what is obviously a Russian government having badly compromising information on a U.S. president and get this guy out of office. And yet nothing happens. We've got a lot of condemnations. He farts out that apology on, I guess it was Wednesday or Tuesday, whenever it was this past week. Then he promptly goes to Twitter, complains that the media didn't cover the press conference properly and crows about the fact that Vladimir Putin is going to be invited in the fall before the U.S. midterm elections to Washington, D.C., to the White House for a summit. You know, where are the Republican senators? It is a 50-49 split in the Senate. There are not two Republican senators that would take the gavel out of the hand of Mitch McConnell and give it over to the Democrats to stop this kind of crap and to actually demand better and to stop the Trump agenda. This is completely illegitimate for him to have any control when this kind of you know, sword is hanging over his head. And the fact is that the sword is real. And we are in some serious danger. No wonder Putin's laughing. We look like we, as the Western world, led nominally by this fucker in the White House. We all look like fools, and the Republicans are making everybody look like fools because they won't do shit all about this. Not Lisa Murkowski, not John McCain, not Susan Collins, not Jeff Flake, who goes down to the well of the Senate and, you know, yells and screams about treasonous behavior by the U.S. president, but will not vote against anything that's put forward by this president, this administration, will not demand to hold hearings, will not do anything, won't even cross to caucus with the Democrats. And to just give more power to the people who want to find out what's really going on. It's disgraceful.
It is.
And, you know, what's even worse is in the wake of everything that's happened, we've got the Senate doing one good thing, actually. It's not that it's worse. They voted 98-0 to reject sending the former U.S. ambassador to Russia back to Russia for questioning. But then a motion by the Democrats in the House of Representatives to have the American interpreter in the meeting testify at the meeting that was held privately between Trump and Putin, testify before Congress, was defeated by the GOP majority. The Homeland Security Secretary, Kristen Nielsen, comes out and says that she's seen no evidence that Russia wanted Trump to win, despite Putin literally saying it during the press conference in Helsinki. And now stories coming out that there is data, including cell phone records, text messages, emails, that shows that Vladimir Putin was actively involved in undermining and directing the 2016 campaign. And last Friday, Bob Mueller, as part of his investigation into interference with the 2016 elections, charged 12 Russian military intelligence officers with conducting, quote, large-scale cyber operations to interfere with the 2016 U.S. presidential election. There's stuff in there about how they got analytics from Hillary Clinton's campaign, and that certain buys were then canceled after said analytics were done. Analytics, by the way, is a way to properly target voters. That when Trump came out in July 2016 and said, Russia, if you're listening, July 27th, 2016, we would love it if you'd find those 30,000 emails that are missing. That very day, the Russian government tried to cyber attack the DNC and Hillary Clinton's third party email server to try and find those. I mean, across the board, what's going on is inconceivable, and yet nothing happens. It is mind blowing.
Well, you know, we can assume things are going on behind the scenes that we might not know about. There's also this crazy story that somebody connected some dots together where their ad buys suddenly drastically shifted. They were spending all sorts of money in one state, and suddenly they stopped spending money and went to another state.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Right? When the analytics were found,
completely to when Russia was getting information on certain states and interfering in the voter rolls in certain states. So.
Well, that goes back to what I was talking about.
You got. I like the thing I keep reminding people is it did take 2 years before anything happened with Watergate. A lot of things go on behind the scenes the public has no clue about, and things are maybe chess pieces being moved as we speak. And that's the optimist in me is hoping that is what's happening now, because it's a dreadful period in contemporary history that is frightening. But who knows?
It is frightening. I will say, though, at the White House, let's spare some sympathy for those poor, poor, poor Trump staffers who were quoted in a political article saying, people are just depressed, said one Republican close to the White House. Nobody wants to take on the public heat of resigning right now. But there are a bunch of people who were thinking maybe they'd leave after the midterms, who are very seriously starting to consider accelerating their timetable. Yeah, won't leave when Trump says that neo-Nazis are good people. Won't do anything when the evidence is stacked against him. Didn't go anywhere with grab him by the pussy. I mean, didn't go anywhere when Gold Star family were being attacked. Didn't go anywhere when kids were being ripped away from their families and are being ripped away from their families at the border. Nope. But they're going to go now. They're going to accelerate their timetable. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Come on.
And also, none of them can get hired, apparently. Many of them are trying to leave and to get other jobs, but nobody will hire them. So
Well, maybe
who's going to hire
good luck
them?
With that.
Seriously.
Well, yeah. Chick-fil-A might have something for Sarah Huckabee as a taster. She'd be great eating chicken. I'm actually not. Now, I don't know it for a fact. I just know for sure that Sarah Huckabee is actually Mike Huckabee in drag. Just saying. They look exactly alike. Exactly alike. It's actually quite horrendous. It disturbs my dreams.
You dream about Sarah Huckabee?
Yeah, please.
Only after I've gotten trashed on kerosene and lead paint. So let's talk about our former prime minister again. So this feels like a repetition in some respects of 2 weeks ago because we talked about him then, but he insists on being in the news. He can't fade away after the voters handed him his ass in 2015. So Stephen Harper, our sullen, miserable fuck of a former prime minister, was caught on a recording saying to the Australia-Canada Economic Forum that Trudeau didn't want a NAFTA deal because it was politically advantageous to him and the Liberals. And then he whined that he could be helpful to the government, but implied they'd rather use him as a dartboard, something the PMO rejects. And the quote from CTV News was that Harper told the Montreal audience that he said he could be, quote, very helpful to them, end quote. But the Trudeau government didn't want his help. Rather, they wanted to, quote, use him in another way. The PMO has told CTV News that this is not the case, rejecting Harper's characterization. CTV News has learned that in June, after the acrimonious G7 meetings, Trudeau contacted Harper by phone to talk about possible cooperation on the NAFTA file. Around the time, Harper appeared on Fox News to argue in favor of Canada's position. That cooperation never materialized. As CTV News first reported, PMO officials were taken by surprise when they learned about Harper's planned visit to the White House to meet with senior U.S. officials, end quote. So this latest Harper moment comes about 3 weeks after his secret White House meeting with Larry Kudlow and National Security Advisor John Bolton, where Harper said, quote, trade issues obviously came up, but that he wanted to provide the two officials with his, quote, client context, because, of course, he runs a consulting firm. So, Mike, is the old boss trying to scuttle a NAFTA deal for partisan reasons and screw the new boss?
He absolutely is. I mean, it came out that back in June, Prime Minister Trudeau reached out to Harper to discuss cooperation with him on creating a new NAFTA deal, to which Harper never responded to. So the mere act of him publicly stating that this is partisan is a partisan move by Stephen Harper. Like, I mean, it's chicken and egg, right? I mean, he's accusing Trudeau of being partisan by him being partisan himself. He has no business inserting himself into this deal without working with our prime minister. As a former prime minister, he should be working with Pierre Trudeau, for Christ's sakes. Justin Trudeau. He should be working with Justin Trudeau, or he should be staying out of it altogether. And what he's doing doesn't help Canada. He says he's helping Canada, but this is not helping Canada at all. All this is doing is keeping his face in the news. And we discussed this on previous pods, that his face is in the news because he's got bigger plans. And those bigger plans are becoming obvious, and it's pissing everybody off because he's not helping the matter at all. And he's going into Washington. You know, he accused the prime minister's office of leaking his trip to Washington. I mean, he walked in the front goddamn door. What did he expect?
Well,
he was photographed walking into the White House. Oh, the Trudeau government leaked that I was going there. How about the reporters that took your picture? You have the worst haircut in politics. It's not hard to spot.
And also, like, the Trudeau hatred is just so strong with this guy. Like, he can't let it go. I'll give him credit. He's got balls. Like, he just doesn't seem to be acknowledging or recognizing that people hate him. Right?
And like,
pick some balls.
And everybody is dumping on him. Like, I saw Rick Anderson, who is a conservative strategist or former conservative strategist, worked for Preston Manning, came out and was like, this is just disappointing. You know, other conservatives, I mean, everybody, even nonpartisans, are like, what are you doing? This, I mean, and for Harper, of all people, to suggest that politics is at play. This is a man that broke election laws, that prorogued parliament to avoid losing a non-confidence vote, that was found in contempt of parliament, that played fast and loose with electoral rules, the in and out scandal, the robocalls, things, that is was the very essence of political with a capital P. Actually, capitalize the whole word and underscore it and bold it and put it in a large font, because Harper is the last person that should be complaining about politicization of anything. But everybody, I mean, even his own former ministers disagree with him. James Moore, former industry minister, on the Prime Minister's NAFTA Advisory Council. Rona Ambrose, who succeeded him as interim leader of the Conservative Party and opposition leader, came out against or is on the Prime Minister's NAFTA Advisory Council. And the list goes on and on. And it makes me wonder, what did Harper say in that meeting in July the 2nd? Where is the readout of that meeting? I think he's trying, and I think you're right, Mike. He is actively trying to undermine our position. He's been down at Mar-a-Lago shilling for a bunch of crap clients of his. He is trying to screw us, and he's trying to screw us hard, and it's no different than what he would have done if he was in office. The only difference is he would have bent over a lot quicker.
Interesting.
It just makes me very angry. Like it's almost.
No, it's like you had your how many years? Nine? How many years was it? I can never remember.
And three quarters.
Like you had it, and I've said before, I have no problem with former prime ministers weighing in and taking issue when they think that the current government is on the wrong course. But this is the whole other level. Like, you know, it's bullshit. And like, seriously, dude, people hated you when you left. Like, George W. Bush had the good sense to not interfere with Obama because he knew what his approval rate was when he left office, and he gave the new guy a chance. But he's this his visceral hatred of the Trudeau name and anything to do with Trudeau, right? It's obviously consumed him.
It must be a very miserable existence being Stephen Harper, because when he was prime minister, he was the most miserable sot around. He had the world in his hand. Here in terms of Canadian politics and power, and yet he still had a chip on his shoulder. He's the only guy in politics I've ever met that had a chip on both his shoulders. I mean,
and his head, apparently.
And his head.
The hair, the fucking hairstyle is just weighing him down, is pulling on him.
You know, it's just
pulling
like,
him down.
It's just
like
this
a huge chip.
It's just this reflexive, angry, sullen, dark era, and yet he still pops up like some rabid gopher. But the thing is, even if you hit him in the head, he pops back up right away because he's Stephen Harper. You can't kill this guy. Not that I would want to see that, mind you, but let me make
that
very clear at all. But, you know, figuratively, you can't knock this guy out, like, at all. But I can't believe that we're living in an age where a former prime minister of the country believes it appropriate for him to be actively undermining trade negotiations because he doesn't like the fact that Pierre Trudeau's son...
He got beaten by a Trudeau.
That's right. Beat him. Unbelievable. And because I'm angry, fuck you, Cheddar Harper.
And, you know, I'm having an allergic reaction to something right now, and so tears are literally streaming down my cheeks. And if I sound like I'm sobbing, it's not really that I'm upset about Stephen Harper. It's that I don't know what's happening to my head.
You haven't had a drink. You've not been around any Russian consulates lately, are you? You might have plutonium poisoning.
I don't know. Like, I put sunscreen on my face, and I think I'm having a reaction to it. So if I sound like I'm dying, I'm not. I'm just, there's something going on with my entire head.
What's the brand of sunscreen?
Like Abra, it's called. It's supposed to be great, but honest to God, I'm having a serious issue.
Not
so,
good, Abra.
Let's keep talking.
Not good, Abra.
If you want to sponsor us, we'll take your money.
Yeah.
What is going on? I'm hiding in a corner of a mall because I came here to get an antihistamine, and people are looking at me like, oh, I guess someone in her family must have died because she appears to be sobbing. There's just rivers of tears flowing from her eyes. But no, it's Abra sunscreen. Avoid, people. Avoid.
Oh,
unless they sponsor us. Don't
unless
avoid.
They sponsor us. Abra, we're open to conversations. All right, let's get quickly before Leanne dies of anaphylactic.
Sunscreen poisoning.
In a mall. And by the way, can I just say that's the dedication, folks, that you have. Leanne is in a mall taking this week's call. And Mike is at work. And I'm here in the studio, but this is the dedication you get from this team. Okay.
The best thing is that the mall that I'm at is known colloquially in the neighborhood as Sex Offender Square.
you might be able
it's
to
that
find
that kind of mall.
You might be able to find that Trump P tape there. Just saying.
And if anyone from work's listening, I am on my lunch.
Me too. Right. Okay, last thing we want to talk about this week. Let's talk about the retooled federal cabinet. The prime minister shuffled the cabinet this week on Wednesday, expanding it to 35 members from 30. He maintained gender parity, 17 women, 17 men, plus himself, so 18 men, I suppose, in that sense, and sparing the stars on the front bench from being shuffled like Bill Morneau and Chrystia Freeland. Some highlights: Bill Blair, who was the cannabis czar, will remain the cannabis czar, but moved into a ministry responsible for border security and organized crime, which puts him up for confrontation with his old friend Doug Ford, who hates his guts. Jim Carr moves from natural resources, where he successfully, you know, got the Keystone Pipeline approved. Or not Keystone, my goodness, Trans Mountain.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, and then he's now the Minister of Trade Diversification, which is great because, as Trudeau said, we need to start diversifying our trade exports and our markets and can't rely on the United States. And then Melanie Joly, who was the Heritage Minister who couldn't seem to do anything right, gets downgraded to Tourism Official Languages and La Francophonie. And I guess there's a couple others, but they're not as interesting to me as those three. Anything that stood out for you two?
Bill Blair one was surprising.
Yeah.
I thought that was smart, actually, because whether the border crossing supposed crisis is an actual crisis or not, people seem to think that it is, as they do people in Toronto are all freaked out about the gun violence. So there he took care of two issues that voters are concerned about in one fell swoop, right? I think that's pretty smart.
Mm-hmm. And it's just an added benefit. It's just an added benefit that every time that Bill Blair's name is mentioned, Doug Ford's vein looks like it's going to explode in his head.
You know, what they're doing is they're patching holes, any holes that have appeared, cracks in the plaster as they head into the next election. And then, so I thought it was a fairly smart cabinet shuffle for that reason.
I agree.
How about the photo, though, of him and Mary Ng? Like, what? It was like they were just, have you seen it? It's like they're about to start necking. It's like the cover of a romance novel.
I'm going to look at it right now.
Like, the clutch that they're in is unbelievable. It's like a bodice-ripping romance novel.
Oh, yeah.
why does he get so close to people? I'm finding that disturbing. Like, just a European kiss one cheek, kiss the other cheek is fine. Why are they pulled into... And also, Mary Ng is kind of looking like she's into it. So, okay.
Yeah, they both look like they're into
whatever
it.
Whatever floats your boat.
There's the girl behind
Julie
Trudeau.
Julie Payette looking on like, what is going on here? Too close.
Well, the interesting Marianne,
that was
now she did
my story of the week.
She did formerly work as the Prime Minister's Director of Appointments. So, I mean, there's obviously a lot of it's a former staffer of his being elevated into cabinet.
She's a former staffer, all right.
Oh, don't.
Was anybody else?
But then if you look at all of them, he's doing it to all of them. It's just him. It's just like, you know what? Along with the tickle trunk that you need to put away and never bring out again, you might want to just ease up on the closeness of the embraces.
Yes.
That's all I'm advising.
No, I think that's good advice. It's fair. We live in a new era. Not everybody wants close talkers. We've seen Seinfeld deal with this 20 years ago.
Well, it's Me Too, and you just got accused of grabbing someone's ass or whatever it was he claims to have done. Like, maybe just ease up on the violations of people's personal space. That's my only advice.
All right.
That's all I really have to say about the cabinet shuffle.
Can I just ask both of you, was anybody else shocked that Bill Morneau got to stick around? I thought he might get downgraded to, or not even downgraded, like moved to international trade. Not that Jim Carr is a bad representative at all. He'll do great there. But I thought Bill Morneau might wind up over at international trade or innovation or something, just because I'm not too sure that he's completely out of the, he scored a lot of goals on his own net this past year.
Yeah, for sure.
And yet he's still there.
But I think that would be an admission, maybe too much of an admission, that we actually have sucked on that file, right? I'm not sure, but I think there is that consideration. And he did backtrack on the small business taxes, which was going to cause him so much trouble. So,
and Chrystia Freeland,
I feel like
of course.
I'm drowning right now.
No, it's okay. Drowning in tears. Chrystia Freeland, though, she stays. Okay. I would have liked to see her made formerly Deputy Prime Minister, but you know what? As long as she stays in the front seat, I think I think we're going to be all right. Okay.
Yeah, he's done a good job.
Stories of the week. Mike, you get to go first.
Sure. So I'd like to talk about Ontario Community Safety and Correctional Services Minister Michael Tibolo. This jackass goes to Jane and Finch, which is, for those of you that don't live in Toronto, it's kind of has a reputation of being a bit of a rougher neighborhood. But I mean, it's not like there's a lot of ethnic community there, but I mean, it's just a neighborhood in Toronto. And he goes to Jane and Finch wearing a bulletproof vest. His quote was, "Personally, I went to Jane and Finch and put on a bulletproof vest and spent 7 o'clock to 1 o'clock a.m. visiting sites that had previously had bullet-ridden people killed in the middle of the night." And it's like, dude, come on, man. You don't need to wear a bulletproof vest to Jane and Finch. If you look at, all you have to do is the simplest amount of research, which is the Toronto Police Service's website, and they have a map. And on that map, it has a list of all the crimes in Toronto and which neighborhoods have the most crimes and which have the less crimes. And although Jane and Finch is on the, you know, the top 50th percentile, it is nowhere near the most crime-ridden neighborhood in Toronto. And the fact that this jackass is trying to score political points by wearing a bulletproof vest there just shows how oblivious he is to the communities that he's supposed to be representing. And his walk back on it after is, "Oh, I'm new to politics. Sorry, I didn't know."
Yes.
And it's goddamn racist. Let's face it.
It's super racist. It's, I didn't even want to touch that. But I mean, this guy's, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? Bulletproof vest.
Oh, there's black people there, and the black people might hurt me. I better wear my bulletproof vest.
The Minister of Community Safety should be happy because he's white and he's probably the safest one there is. That's the sad reality. And when those kind of comments are made by the minister, it just underscores that white privilege that we've talked about before. And it's well done. Well done, though.
The thousands and thousands of people that live in that community that don't wear bulletproof vests and live their lives and run their businesses and go to school.
Yeah,
like, go, like, enough. You're done. See you later. Thank you.
All right. Good. Dying Leanne.
I have one.
Yes. Go.
A quick one. The coats. The guy at the Aspen Institute yesterday who was told by Andrew Mitchell that, "Hey, did you know that Putin is coming to Washington in the fall?" And he did not know.
Yes, the director of national intelligence for Donald Trump.
Great.
Not a clue. His advice about the most recent summit was completely ignored. And he actually started laughing and kind of openly mocking the president. And so there's a great story in the Washington Post today about how the president, the White House, the president's going nuts that he was mocking him that way, and that there's a fear that Coates has gone rogue.
Yes.
Really?
Coates has gone rogue because he recognizes Russia as an adversary. He doesn't get the memo.
The person who's gone rogue is the fat, orange, stupid moron who's running the country, not Coates.
Who's compromised by the GRU.
If you haven't seen the footage of Andrea Mitchell telling him, "Oh, we have breaking news," and the reaction and then the laughter that erupted when he was like, "Oh, isn't, well, that's going to be special and funny. I didn't know a thing about it." It's great to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you guys don't mind,
you
I'm
need
gonna
to
hang
go.
Up now because I really am having a problem.
Leanne is dying, so she's gonna go and I'm gonna end with my story of the week so
can't
only Mike gets to hear it.
My eyes have swollen shut in a public place. Goodbye.
Goodbye. We hope to see you in 2 weeks if you're alive. Well, everybody, that might be the last time any of us hear from Leanne. She may be dead in that mall she's labeled a sex offender hangout, but at least we can pray that she'll get the treatment she needs.
I hope she's wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yes, yes. My story this week actually is a little bit of a compliment, and that is to Lisa Raitt, who this week, now granted, the Tories have been pretty aggressive against the government, which is to be expected. They are the official opposition after all. But this week, Lisa Raitt, when she did like the perfunctory coming out to criticize the cabinet shuffle, saying that, you know, it's an admission of failure, all this kind of stuff. But she did take time, and I thought it was really classy on her part, to highlight that, you know, Jim Carr, she said, was a very good Minister of Natural Resources. She talked about the new Minister for Seniors and said Philomena Tassi is going to be, will do a great job because she's very, very compassionate and a decent person. And then she spoke about Dominic LeBlanc, who is now the Intergovernmental Affairs Minister and an old friend of Ms. Raitt, and talked about him as a really good and decent individual as well. Of course, Dominic LeBlanc has been facing some serious health problems the last number of months. But I just thought it was kind of nice. It was a little bit of a break from the meanness, as Susan Delacourt said in the Toronto Star. It was a break from being mean. And it's kind of nice to see compliments given here and there from opposition critics. It doesn't always have to be reflexively nasty and just going for the gut all the time. Hey, Mike, speaking of nasty, you had a story you wanted to share about Candace Bergen.
I just closed my web browser, but Candace Bergen had a tweet up when it was announced that Bill Blair was going to be the new minister for border security, to which she said something along the lines of, you know, if we don't have a border security program, then why is there a minister of border security? And people say it's un-Canadian to mention that we may have a problem at the border. Shut up, Candace. Like,
you know, Candace Bergen is like the Regina George of Ottawa. Mean girls. She is. Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's more like stop trying to make un-Canadian happen. But you know, the best part is that the Tories get to decide, or people like Candace Bergen like to put themselves out as the people that will decide what is and isn't Canadian. They just don't they don't like to be called out when they are dog whistling to their racist the racist wing nuts in their that make up some of their base. Candace Bergen proving again that the mean girls philosophy continues to run here in Ottawa. We've got Candace Bergen, who is Regina. We've got Michelle Rempel, who is George. What's her name?
Look, man, you go on to your Mean Girls casting. I've seen the movie. I enjoyed it, but I certainly don't know it verbatim.
I do. Don't make fetch happen. No, you can't. I don't know. I can't remember the line, so I guess I don't know it very well at all. All right, so that's it. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. Leanne hopefully will
be with us.
If not, I hope there's a priest near that mall to give last rites. And you guys have some apologizing to do. What is it? Arbra sun tanning lotion. And the best apology is a sponsorship.
I'm going to throw out, though, if anyone's listening to this today, which is Friday, July the 20th, if any of you know what the Sex Offender Mall is, could someone please go over there and make sure Leanne's okay?
Yes. Yeah,
because she didn't tell us what the name of the mall was. She just said the nickname of it, so I don't know where she is.
Yeah, that is a very good point. If there's anybody in the Toronto area, Toronto Police Service, that might know that nickname, that you could go over and help our co-host, that would be great.
That would be super great.
It would be super great.
We'll give you a shout out on the pod.
All right. Well, have a good week, Mike.
Yeah. See ya.
Ciao.
Bye.
Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. We will be back, as we said, last show. We are doing a summer schedule, so we'll be back in August. Enjoy the rest of July. We're going to leave you with the clip of MSNBC reporter Andrea Mitchell informing Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats that the Russian president was invited to the White House in the fall by Donald Trump, something he, again, had to find out from a reporter, not his boss. Here it is. Enjoy the clip. Enjoy the rest of July. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Say, we have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again.
Vladimir Putin coming.
Did I hear you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.